This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Sandy Kearney, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 80, Extra Life.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, listeners. Welcome to another show with Michael Rowe and myself, Phaedra Boinodiris, at gamesatwork.biz. We've got a very exciting show for you today, starting off with Oculus Rift. There's been a lot of buzz on the streets regarding the big purchase by Facebook. Michael, what have you got to say on the matter?
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, everybody. Yeah, it's a wonderful day. We're going to talk about the Oculus Rift and Facebook. And it's funny. My gut reaction was frustration, right? Because I'm currently reading the book, The Age of Context, by Robert Scoble and Shay Israel. And it really talks about how data in context is important and how the Internet of Things and pinpoint marketing and all this is coming together. And when I think of Facebook in general, and yes, we have a Facebook page for gamesatwork.biz, Facebook tends to be less than transparent about their privacy policy. Matter of fact, one of the biggest frustrations I have with Facebook is every so often when I bring up the page, it decides that I would rather see top stories instead of in sequence, right? You know, the most recent stuff at the top. It also doesn't necessarily show me all my data from all my friends that I'm following. And so I think of those data points in context of the Oculus Rift acquisition. And Oculus Rift, for those who don't know what this is a headset that provides immersive 3D capabilities for the gaming industry. And years ago in our prior podcast that we used to do, we were really talking about, again, using gaming technology in virtual worlds for business, fully immersive 3D environments. And if we took that as something, as an engaging space, and you apply those other data points on Facebook, you know, in theory, you and I could walk right past each other in virtual space and not see each other because you're on the most recent stories timeline and I'm on the, you know, date specific timeline, or because of the current algorithm, it decides that it's not important for me to see you. And the great thing about 3D virtual spaces and things like Oculus Rift is when you have an immersive environment that you're in, it's those chance meetings where you run into each other. And so my gut reaction was,
Wait. Back up. Tell us why you think, why did Facebook buy them? What does this have to do with their business model? I mean, this was specifically for gaming. I mean, 3D virtual glassware, headwear, so you can have this immersive gaming environment. Why Facebook? Why would Facebook be interested in them?
Well, I think from everything I've read and going back, Facebook missed the mobile revolution when they started. And if you listen to what Mark Zuckerberg has talked about on this, he feels that those immersive virtual engaging environments are going to be the next space. And so since they missed mobile for the longest time and took a long time to get it right, I think they're trying to get ahead of the curve there. And so from that perspective, you know, I think that's a brilliant move from Facebook's perspective. The other thing is, when you think about Facebook, a lot of people use Facebook to play games. Now, they're games like Candy Crush and Farmville and all these other things. So imagine if you could pull the person even more into the Facebook ecosystem around games. And third, it's funny, you know, more and more Facebook is becoming the place where your mom's at. Right? Or us old folks. right?
Losing the cool factor.
Losing the cool factor and no longer attracting kids or the younger generation. So by shifting over to new, cool, younger generation tech, I think they're trying to get that cool factor back too.
How much were they bought for again? Do you recall?
$2 billion.
With a B. So the flack that I had heard was from people who had actually funded them on Kickstarter initially. People had gone, they had dumped their money, $50 here, $100 there, and now
$200 for the headset.
For billions, Oculus Rift gets bought by Facebook. And now these investors, even though guaranteed they were small investors, crowdfunded via Kickstarter, they're kind of looking at each other like, is it right for us to not have benefited from this?
Yeah, so I saw a lot of that too, and I think that's a lame statement. Most companies, and this is the thing that's a little frustrating about Kickstarter for me, most companies are using Kickstarter as like an early fulfillment engine, right? To say, hey, we've got this idea, we want to test the market, we want to see if we can get enough orders to drive larger investment.
Right.
Oculus Rift did not traditionally present itself like that, but what they did do is they showed, here's a prototype. They pitched it as a prototype, and as such, people were able to get early access to a prototype. They didn't say, invest in our company. They said, invest in this idea, and we'll send you an early one of it. That was the agreement. That was the financial agreement. The financial agreement was not, and you get 0.1% of our company. So while I understand people looking at this and saying, wait a minute, you took our great little investment in, and you're not giving us a payback, the people got what they paid for. They paid for an Oculus Rift. Matter of fact, and I'm going to try to find the name of the company. I was at Macworld last week, right?
I did my
yearly geek trip, I'm trying to see. I know I saved all the content from Macworld. I'll have to find it. But
post it to the show notes.
I will post it to the show notes. But there was another company there showing off their 3D headset.
Oh.
And I'm trying to remember the name. And I actually got to play with it. And it was a much more polished physical product, technology wise. You know, I've played with the Oculus, I've played with this one whose name I cannot remember, and I'm actually going to the site to see if I can track down the name of the company, because I think that'll make it more important for people who are listening, and I'll actually allow them to see the product, and you can look at it too while we talk. Oh man, this is gonna drive me nuts. Anyway, think of a Beats headset, right?
Yeah.
With the headset bar that goes across your head pulled in front of your eyes.
Okay.
That's what it looked like. And the thing that it did is you had to take off your glasses, and I wear glasses, and you could independently adjust the focal point of either eye as well as the width of the eyes. So you could make it basically offset your glasses, so you didn't have to have your glasses on. Now with the Oculus Rift, you can actually put it on right now with the glasses on, and it kind of fits. But it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. So where was I going with that? I believe they were a Kickstarter too at one time. But they
didn't get purchased by Facebook, so maybe no issues of privacy like what you're concerned about.
Yeah,
a company to look for if you're interested in the space.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem for me with the Facebook acquisition is the privacy angle.
Okay.
And but I think as someone who supports the concept of this technology, they've got deep pockets now to actually do the right investment over time, right? The investment that I think Oculus had just closed, I want to say $250 million in investment a month or so ago.
I wonder who else was in line to buy them. I'm curious.
Well, it sounded like it was kind of impromptu acquisition. It wasn't like there was a big line of people. It was like, hey, we think this would be cool. Let's get it.
Interesting.
Okay, the name of the company is the Avegant, AVEGANT.com. And it's a slick looking product. It's been featured on a lot of different tech sites, etc., over the years, and they do a really good job there. So the nice thing here is Sony announced theirs. Do you remember what Sony's headset is announced? They announced it a couple of weeks ago for 3D.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we're not crowded yet, but we're starting to get a crowd forming in this space, which is really cool. And speaking of crowds.
Speaking of crowds, our next topic of conversation is with regards to how games and gamification is being used to crowdsource intel for procurement. We're seeing more and more and more examples of companies and organizations and government agencies utilizing this approach. In fact, there's a really cool article out there called So You Think You're Smarter Than a CIA Agent. It's a blog by NPR, but it touches on this subject quite a bit. And in essence, it's this premise of what can you gather from a large group of people with regards to information out on the field, the marketplace, intel, such that you might be able to develop a product or service or even a procurement strategy that makes the best sense for your organization. And again, we're seeing this more and more and more. A lot of orgs are actually attaching prediction markets to these implementations to get an even more granular approach. For those who don't know, a prediction market is a virtual stock market around a product or an idea where you can buy and sell shares of stock associated with this idea. So in essence, instead of just tagging something in a game saying, you know, I really like this, or I rank it like this, or here's what my feedback is, you can actually take each individual feedback back, put it into a stock market, so you can have the crowd determine what's most likely to serve well within the market.
Yeah, and there's a couple of famous prediction markets that have happened over the years. There's a I'm gonna not remember any of their names, but I will describe what they do. There was a Hollywood prediction market where you would buy and sell stars, right? To say, you know, predicting their movies and the success of their movies. There are prediction markets around. Let me see. There's a couple of them. The Sim Exchange, which is lifetime sales of video games and consoles and software titles, and you know how well are they going to do? And we'll have a link to it. There's a really good Wikipedia article on this. But there was an election one, calling the election. There were all kinds of ones, and what's really interesting is it's not necessarily that individuals are smarter about predicting things. It's that when you think of the kind of the wisdom of crowds effect, it converges to better answers than any expert can do on topics. And the neat thing about the NPR article was really talking about how they're using a model to identify those individuals in the crowd who are better at predicting than the rest of the crowd. So you're almost building a mini crowd in the larger crowd to identify the people who guess better.
like analysts, your optimized analyst. I want to just speak really quickly to the business value of something like this in case it isn't really obvious. So
in case it isn't really obvious.
Really obvious. So what we've heard from organizations is that with this kind of an approach, you can actually leapfrog over investments. So for example, your typical procurement strategy, you're putting out requirements, you're gathering RFPs from different vendors, you do initial prototypes. And then you make, you know, investments over time via phased approach. With something like this, you can actually start to gather information regarding investments and potentially even leapfrog over renditions of prototypes so that you can get more bang for your buck faster and really be able to tailor it for your end audience.
Yeah, it's funny. One of the before the show started, we were talking about what are some of the controversial aspects of prediction markets. And there's one prediction market that was predicting the death of world leaders.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, especially if you really want to win.
Yeah, I know, seriously.
Because it talks about, you know, it could actually become an assassination market. Yeah. And it's like, oh, man, I would have never thought about that, right? Really, I mean, this idea has been around for a while, right? And what's interesting is how it kind of fades in and out of mainstream thought. It just like, I mean, we talk about, you know, the subject of this podcast, which is gaming technology for business and how it can be used. James Surowiecki, Surowiecki.
Yep.
I've read this book. I can't believe I can't remember the author name, but how bad I am with names in general, it's not a surprise. But the interesting part is, again, gaming technology for business, if we think about in general, has been around for hundreds of years, right? And so you think about the marketplace in the city square in medieval times and how the barker would try to gain people in to even touch the product because they knew if you touch the product, you now have a relationship with the product. And then based off of that relationship, they can game you further into acquisition, right? And so the concepts have changed. I mean, not the concepts haven't changed over time, but the implementations. And with digital assets, we talk about this one a lot too, gaming people in order to get that dopamine drip. And Phaedra, I know you didn't make the show last time, but we talked about that dopamine drip that is causing me to get rid of a bunch of games that I've been playing.
Which ones in particular?
Let me see. Dungeon Keeper.
Keeping you up till 3 a.m.
Dungeon Keeper got dropped. I'm pretty much stopping Star Wars online. There are a couple other ones. It's just the dopamine drip's not there. And basically, one of the key points for me on why I drop a game is the freemium model. I am more and more disassociating myself with games that use the freemium model, especially if they're grossly overt in how they try to force you into pay, right? One that Michael's a big fan of, Tiny Tycoon, gone.
Yeah.
Gone.
I think we had a show about the freemium model.
Yep.
Didn't we? Yeah.
So what games have you been playing lately?
Right now, mainly strategy. More and more. That's it in essence. But I've been so slammed with my work. It's hard to find time. That and casual games.
Yeah, what's your favorite casual game right now?
I've been playing a bunch of, with my, I've got a 3-year-old who has now discovered the realm of video games. So right now we're playing Marvel Super Heroes Lego.
Ooh.
On the PS3, so
awesome.
He's totally digging that, begging me, saying, "I want to play Super Spider-Man, quick, put it on Spider-Man." So
I think I have a version of that on my Wii.
Yeah, he's very much digging that and Fancy Pants, and so we're having fun with it.
Very cool.
So really, that's the slot of time when actually I can actually find time to play.
So at Macworld there was a company. Oh God. I'll put their link in the show notes too. That was gaming household chores targeting kids. So it was an iPad app that allowed you to divide up the chores. And we talked about chore wars years ago. Years ago on the podcast. But this is really trying to target kids and the family to divvy up chores and make it a little bit more engaging, more fun.
I remember that.
So... there was also, speaking of kids, there was a company, the founder and his wife live in Israel and in France. And so they were building baby. They called it babyless or babyliz or something like that. And the idea was, how do you do a Facebook Lite application for the family that kept everything focused and easy enough for a baby to use? And
really? I'm sitting going,
I could not imagine, you know, baby drool on my iPad.
That would be bad. That would be bad.
So, well, I know we've just got a short show today. Any other thoughts? What's your thought about Oculus Rift?
When I saw the initial videos, I was really pumped, really, really excited. It just makes me wonder, though, with this acquisition, is Facebook now positioning themselves to be a publisher of Oculus Rift games? It's just going to be interesting to see what they end up doing. Is that the new business model that they're going to be going in? Because to date, they've been acting mainly as a channel for other publishers. So just curious. It will be fun to watch.
There's only one other thing that I want to hit really, 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 really quick. You notice how long I said that? Yep. I got a chance to talk to the people from Extra Life over at Macworld. And this is the company that does the 24 hours of gaming, raising funds for various children's hospitals around the country.
Yep.
And I did an interview with a couple of people, one of the gamers and one of the workers there that we're going to include in this show to talk about how you could use games to help children's hospitals and actually say, I've got to make an appointment for 24 hours of nonstop gaming in the fall. So 24 hours of nonstop gaming. That could be board games. It could be video games. Card games, you name it. And so we're going to put a plug in for them. And right at the end of the show, we'll put in a couple of minutes of interview with the people from extralife.org.
Cool. Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. So other than that, I think we're missing Sandy and Michael. Michael's
Bye,
off
guys.
In Spain having a little vacation.
Vacation is good. And
yep.
Thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in. And please do send us feedback so that we might make this show even better. If you've got suggestions on content, please feel free to reach out. We also have Twitter handles, Innovate Game. That's with the number 8 for me and Michael.
Michael Rose 01. Or you can reach our other two co-hosts. Michael Martin is at Carolina Big Blue. And Sandy Kearney is at SLK@USA. And don't forget, you can always follow the show itself at games@work_biz.
Yes. So thank you again for tuning in and peace out.
So this is Extra Life?
Yes. So this is Extra Life. Our slogan is Play Game, Heal Kids. It's a fundraiser that raises funds for the Children's Miracle Network Hospitals. And it basically works like any sort of fundraiser with a marathon or walk. You sign up, you get your friends and family to sponsor you throughout the year. And then on the date, which is in October, you get together with the rest of your team in your home or in... Sometimes you can get a place, like your workplace will sponsor you and let you hold it there.
Very cool.
And then you just play games for 24 hours. Or last year we did 25 because we had the time change. But yeah, so you just...
And what, you know, an extra hour of gaming is awesome. So I mean, who would turn it down?
Who needs to sleep?
That's right.
But yeah, it was great. Last year they raised over $4 million.
Awesome.
It was amazing. And they work with other gaming companies. I know Twitch is a newer one that they're working with that does video game streaming. They're also part of ESA, so the Entertainment Software Association, which is a huge sponsor. They've worked with the convention here a lot. And today we're signing up people for accounts and for teams. And then when you sign up, we let them do 2 laps on a racing game. And whoever the top 10 lap times are at the end of the convention get $100 towards their campaign to start off with. So we do get sponsors from other places, people who do matching donations,
very cool,
stuff like that.
And what's the website for people who aren't here?
So its website is extra-life.org. So just remember that little dash in the middle.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, the dash is important. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, you had a lot of people sign up so far?
I know we've had over 50 since yesterday, so that's just the first day of the convention.
Right.
So we're definitely expecting a bigger turnout for as it goes through the weekend. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Very cool. This is Michael Kinney from extra-life.org. How long have you guys been around?
So Extra Life began in 2008 as a local fundraiser for Texas Children's Hospital down in Houston. In 2010, it became a Children's Miracle Network hospital program, and so it became an international program with our member hospitals here in the U.S. and Canada. There's roughly around 170 different hospitals that participate in Extra Life or benefit from it. So since 2010, it's been on that national scale. Since then, we've raised just over $8 million.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I was talking with Nina.
She's a local Extra Lifer who's helping out at the booth.
And said that last year sounds like it was pretty successful, around $4 million last year?
Yeah, so we had over 43,000 people sign up to play.
Awesome.
From around the world. It was crazy. I mean, we had people in Australia, London, everywhere playing on game day with us and throughout the year. But we raised over $4.1 million when it was all said and done. And it all goes back towards the hospital that you select to play for. So you know your money and your efforts are going to stay local if you choose the hospital in your backyard.
And so you're here at Macworld this year.
Yep.
Signing people up.
Yep.
Tell me about what are you doing to get people excited here?
Yeah, so we're doing this special little challenge here at Macworld where if they sign up and register, it's completely free, always has been, always will be. But we throw them on Gran Turismo 6, and we give them 2 laps, and we take their best lap time. And if they're on our leaderboard of the top 10 by the end of the convention, we make a $100 donation to that fundraising page that they just set up and jumpstart their fundraising, and it's going to go back to the hospital they selected to play for.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, Michael, thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.